The practice of receiving oral public comment at Campbell County Board of Commissioner meeting is suspended immediately. It will no longer be an agenda item.
That First Amendment is just great. Well, until it becomes inconvenient, and then you just issue a statement and do away with the whole thing. At least that's what Campbell County Commission Chairman Bob Mall seems to think. You know, I just knew that that stack of pocket constitutions I have lying around would come in handy one day. I should underline the part of the First Amendment that says to petition the government for a redress of grievances and send it to the good chairman. While I'm at it, maybe I ought to send him a copy of the Wyoming Constitution, too, because he obviously hasn't read that one either. You know, Article 1, Section 1 that says, all power is inherent in the people. He probably wouldn't read it anyway. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to another very inconvenient episode from high above all other pedantic forms of Wyoming mainstream media, not including the Gillette News Record, because they appear to be putting out the early edition. I'm your illustrious host, David Iverson, broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming. Do you guys remember that TV show, Early Edition? Yeah, it came out in like 1996, but the premise of the show is the guy would receive the morning paper a day early so that he could go out and save people's lives that were reported in the paper. Well, see, that actually happened in Gillette yesterday. No, really. I'm totally being serious, and you can't make this stuff up. It's so good. So let me set the stage for you. Late last week, Campbell County Commission Chairman Bob Mall put out a statement that the commission was no longer going to be taking public comment as it relates to the library issue. And then, as we started the show with, you heard his statement that was given in the Campbell County Commission meeting yesterday morning. He said that they're not going to be taking any public comment, period, as part of an agenda item. So they held a vote, and it was 3-2. Colleen Faber and Del Shellstad voted against the measure in favor of accepting public comment during a commission meeting. So they went on with their regular business, and then a guy walks in and interrupts the meeting with yesterday morning's paper that on the front page had the vote already reported, and it said 3-2. In this first soundbite, you'll hear the guy interrupting the meeting. Now, the audio's a little choppy, but you can hear what he says if you listen closely.
I'm just curious on how the newspaper's out already on your vote. I want to know.
What? How in the world?
This had to be printed last night.
What do you know about this? Where is it?
We're conducting our county business here. So.
Thanks for saying that. That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Oh, wait. I know what happened.
Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
Okay, maybe not. Well, at the end of the meeting, the reporter from the Gillette News Record is called on the carpet and asked to explain himself how this could possibly happen. Now listen really close, because the reporter does not tell you how they were able to report the vote.
Jonathan, I do have one question. How did that hit the front page of the newspaper on a vote that's never been taken? Yes.
Jonathan Gallardo, Gillette News Record.
Mm-hmm. Is this historic? Have you ever been in that seat?
I have not, no. Yeah, so the story on the front page of today's newspaper, which was written, wrote it yesterday, it said the commissioners would not take public comment on the library issue. Based on your letter from Friday, it did not say anything about not taking public comment at all. So it's not like there's some conspiracy going on between.
It was on information that you had already from the prior statement that had gone out to the county.
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to straighten that out.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Oh, well, that just straightens everything out, doesn't it? I mean, I'm totally clear how you were able to report the vote the day before it actually happened. Well, anyhow, if you want to watch the entire meeting, it's available at Gillette Public Access, and I put a link to that page at cowboystatepolitics.com. All the timey-wimey Doctor Who stuff starts at about the 29-minute mark. Tomorrow, I'm going to be speaking with former Representative Scott Clem from Gillette. He was present at the meeting but was asked to leave before all the craziness ensued. We're going to visit about the library and about the county commissioners not taking public comment anymore, and I'll play that interview for you during Weekend Update. While all the intrigue that's happening in Campbell County is pretty interesting, there's some other things that are really important that are happening in Wyoming, one of which is the special session that's been called in by our state legislators. It's going to happen October 26th through October 28th. To get an explanation of what exactly is going to go on, Ken Pendergraf from the Ramble Room and I interviewed Representative John Bear from Gillette. It's an interesting discussion, but before we get to it, some totally egregious self-promotion. You can listen to the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting apps. iHeartRadio, Spotify, TuneIn, really any of them will work, but the easiest way is just to go to the website, cowboystatepolitics.com. There you can find all of the shows, as well as any of the articles that I might bring up during the course of a program. If your name is Sleepy Joe Biden or Campbell County Commission Chairman Bob Mall, and you don't have a clue what's going on, well, you can go to cowboystatepolitics.com, pull up an article, and educate yourself, just like you should have been doing all along, but didn't. If your company's or group's values line up with those of Cowboy State Politics, well, then you need to shoot me an email. The address is david@cowboystatepolitics.com. Cowboy State Politics is the largest conservative podcast in the state of Wyoming, and there's lots of advertising opportunities available. So go ahead and shoot me a message, and we'll get that conversation started for you. The special session that's been called is an attempt by our legislators to do something about these vaccine mandates that are coming. Now, it's important to point out that right now, there isn't a law, there's no executive order, there's no mandate whatsoever. All of these companies are just mandating vaccines of their employees just because they think it's coming. There's nothing that's actually compelling them to do so. I guess they're probably just trying to get ahead of the curve. Well, our legislators called a special session from October 26th to October 28th to do something about these vaccine mandates and prevent people from losing their jobs. Because if they don't, a lot of people are going to be out of work, and they're going to have to do so just for the simple reason that they don't want to put something in their body that they don't know what it is. They want to protect their liberty. And that's what we talked with Representative John Bear about. Here's the discussion. The Wyoming legislature has voted itself into special session. It's a little bit different than what happens normally. Normally, the governor calls our legislators into session, but that didn't happen this time because our favorite Governor Gordon apparently didn't want to have a special session. But to talk about all this, I thought there's no better person to tell us how things work and the objectives of the special session than Representative John Bear. John, how are you today?
I am well, thank you, and glad to be on with you fellas. I am a little flattered by that intro, but there's probably better experts out there on this, but I'm going to be happy to share with you whatever I know. Shouldn't take terribly long to give you that information.
All right. Well, we appreciate your time. Also, I need to introduce Ken Pendergraf from the Ramble Room. He's co-hosting this episode with us. So, Ken, you're welcome, too.
Why, thank you. Yeah. It is good to be with you again.
So first question, John, how did you guys vote yourself into special session?
So it's interesting. As you mentioned earlier, the normal process would be for the governor to observe that there's a situation that warrants having the legislature come into session. And he would call that session, that special session, and he would set out the rules. There would be no need for any vote. He would set the date. It could be done with leadership quite easily. In this particular case, where people are losing their jobs or potentially about to lose their jobs because of a mandate that their employer has put in place based on a speech that the president gave threatening that he would be doing something eventually, the governor didn't seem to feel that that was important enough to call a special session. The second method that we could be called into a special session is for the presiding officers to call that. And that would be the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate. They would both have to agree upon that. Now, again, if that were to take place, there would be no need for a vote. And then they would proceed. We would all have to agree upon the rules, but other than that, we would be moving forward. In this case, the body itself called itself into session. So, and that's really the reason that that option is there, is because the legislature, the House in particular, is closest to the people, because each of us has 10,000 or fewer constituents that we represent. And so we are the closest to the people, and it should be capable for us to sense the need for a special session, and we have. And so therefore we had to start with a vote of 35% or more. We achieved that a little over a week and a half ago. And then this week we had to achieve a simple majority. And we accomplished that as well. And now we will be having a special session starting on Tuesday, the 26th of October. The plan is to have a 3-day session. So 26th, 27th, and 28th. And we would hopefully have a bill going to the governor on the 28th. Now, you may know of the Banner situation. Banner Health has stated that they're going to have a mandate go in place on November 1st. And so it is our goal to have legislation in place that would somehow help those employees of Banner Health before November 1st. So that's the goal.
One of the main questions I have, Representative, is that the Wyoming Constitution in Article 1, Section 38 already gives everybody, every Wyoming citizen, the right to make their own health care decisions. I mean, that's in the Constitution. And second, also in the Constitution, is Article 10, Section 5, that says that every corporation that transacts business within the borders of the state of Wyoming has to file with the Secretary of State that says that they agree and accept what's in the Wyoming Constitution. So two questions. One, in your opinion, why isn't that being enforced? And two, what difference will having a special session make if that's already in the Constitution?
This is an excellent, excellent question.
I'm delighted to hear you say that, because I asked Mark the same question and he shook his head and looked at Dana and said, oh, these freshmen.
Yeah, well, I'm going to come down on this a little differently than Representative Jennings. And so if you look at Article 1, Section 38, subparagraph D, I think it's very interesting and very important for the question that you've asked. It states that the state of Wyoming shall act to preserve these rights from undue government infringement, or governmental.
Okay.
So, as is most of the Constitution, both Wyoming's and the United States, it's about limiting government. And Article 1, Section 38, which is a very important right that was brought about by the people of Wyoming at a time when Obamacare was being foisted upon us, is a way of the Constitution stating that people will not be forced by the government to make certain health care decisions. Now, as you may know, I ran a resolution chastising the Wyoming Board of Medicine for doing just that with the likes of hydroxychloroquine during this pandemic. They are a government body. And so they had basically warned doctors that they would be investigated if they were prescribing hydroxychloroquine during the pandemic. Now, they certainly dropped that particular stance shortly after my resolution started going through the process to be voted on. But then you go to Article 10, Section 5, and your question was, why is this not being enforced? Well, I would argue that a corporation can easily say that they agree with the Constitution and yet still enforce a vaccine mandate on their employees, because what they agree with is that the government cannot do that. And yet...
But they can.
Can, exactly. And you just answered the
you know, the previous question with this one as well by pointing out that we need to have statutes on the books that protect individuals and their liberties from their employers. Now, one argument, especially a libertarian style argument, would be that, well, you're just promoting big government, you're regulating businesses. And the answer is yes, we already do that, and yes, we would be. And the particular type of regulation that I would say we need to emulate is what we do to protect people's race and sex as being discriminated against in employment practices. So the ideal bill to come out of this session would be one that makes your vaccination status a protected status, and one that your employer cannot make hiring decisions, raises, other employment decisions based on that status.
Well, it's kind of an interesting comparison because, you know, on the one hand, we want small government and we don't want regulation. So we have to give the individual the right to make their own decisions. But on the other hand, here we have what's going to turn into a mandate from the federal government saying that if you own a business, you have to make sure that your employees are vaccinated. So really, we're kind of catching both sides because we're limiting the government's authority to tell you what to do with your own business. But on the other hand, you're telling a business what they can and can't do. I mean, it seems kind of a little contradictory there.
But remember, what we're telling the business they can and cannot do has to do with individual liberty. And I think that's worth fighting for. As an employer, I don't want the government in my business any more than necessary. But I, in my lifetime, have seen no reason for me to go contrary as an employer to those equal opportunity laws that protect the minorities amongst us.
I want to go back, if I can. You mentioned rules for a special session. My understanding is that if we call a special session, it may or may not be limited to one item of discussion. I know that that would be the cleanest, simplest way, is we just go back and we have a discussion such as we've had here on what we can and can't do, and is there legislation that we can pass that would protect individuals. But there is one side of the equation, one side of the House, who, if given an opportunity, would bring up, for example, Medicaid expansion. There's the other side of the House that might want to bring up the idea of runoff elections. Any insight into where we might stand there?
We'll get back to Representative Baer's answer in just a second. But first, a completely obscene display of capitalism. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. As winter approaches, Morton Buildings wants to make sure that you are well-versed in the lessons of classic values. So let's review. Lesson number one, chivalry. The reason why we have a garage, gentlemen, is not to store things in, but rather to keep you out of the doghouse. It's true. Right now, your wife has to park in front of the garage because you stuffed all of your fun summertime toys on the inside, and now she has to get out in the cold and walk that 30 feet from where she parked her car to the front door, and you wonder why you have to sleep on the couch. Now, you could prevent all of this couch sleeping if you just call my friends Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings, 307-674-2532. These guys can build you any size of building that you need. They're the experts in what they do, and they've been doing it longer than anybody else around. So give them a call, 307-674-2532, and they'll keep you out of the doghouse and off the couch. This has been Morton Buildings Lessons in Classic Values. Don't forget about the Cowboy State Politics Facebook page. Like it, share it, follow it, tell everybody you know about it. Of course, I'll post all of the episodes there, but as well as anything I might find during the course of the week that I think you might be interested in. And now, back to the program.
Yeah, and again, another excellent segue to what really needs to be talked about in this discussion, and as that is this rules vote, which is the next hurdle we will have to cross. So we are currently operating under rules that we passed in the beginning of January that should cover our operations as a legislature for the next for 2 years. That process to get through a bill through both houses and ready for the governor to sign is typically a process of a couple of weeks, because it would go through one house through a committee and then three readings in the main chamber on different days each reading, and then if passing that third reading it would go over to the other house, do the same thing. If there's a difference, then it would have to come back to the original house for a vote to see if we agreed or disagreed with what the other house did with it. And if we disagree, then it has to go to a committee to work out the differences before we can ever send it to the governor. All that has to be condensed down into 3 days, really, for us to be effective. And no one really wants the legislature to be in session any more than necessary. And I'll tell you, just as you bring up Medicaid expansion, most times when the legislature is in session, it's rare that you as a citizen will come out with more liberty rather than less. And so I don't take this very lightly, us going into session, but I know how important it is, because this is one opportunity where we can actually fight for liberty as a legislator, and that is our duty. Now, this one subject, there's lots of things that should be addressed in the near future. Our next session is scheduled for mid-February. And, people would love to get their agenda moved forward right now, but that's really not what this is about. We're coming into session because of an emergency situation caused by the executive branch of the federal government, which has nothing to do with those other two issues you bring up. And there are others, for instance, SAPA. There will be an effort to bring the Second Amendment Preservation Act forward during this special session. And though I am supportive of a Second Amendment Preservation Act, I am not supportive of torpedoing this particular special session in an effort to get multiple subjects covered. And it's been made clear to both myself and the public that the governor is prepared to veto just about anything that comes out of this session other than something dealing with vaccine mandates. Not to mention that he may just veto whatever we bring out of it.
There is a time when each legislator must think, maybe with a little bit of a defeatist attitude, that we're basically just going through the motions to be able to turn around and tell our constituents, this is what I did, in an effort to shovel sand into the ocean, I guess might be one way to put it. There was a bill brought up some time ago that said we're going to slice the budget across the board 0.1%, and it was voted down. Kind of a symbolic thing. Now, I sincerely hope that we'll actually be able to accomplish something, but even if one begins to believe that the odds are overwhelming and it just can't be done, one still has to do what I think is the right thing in his own mind. Any thoughts on that?
I concur with you 100%. You know, when I look at my own short career in the legislature, I feel like this is something that God prepared me for, and that I am answering his call to do this. And what I do not know is whether that call is to slow the slide of our great republic into the cesspool of socialism, or if it is an effort to turn the ship around and to bring back the greatness of this country. So either way, I will work hard to serve my fellow man in that regard.
Well, one major opponent to the special session is the Red Star. Who would have thought? In an editorial today entitled, "The Upcoming Special Session is About Performance, Not About Results." Like I say, and this is their editorial page, there's an interesting passage. Let me just read it to you. Quote, then there's the matter of the U.S. and Wyoming constitutions. The U.S. Constitution includes within it the Supremacy Clause, which holds that the federal supersedes state statute. The Wyoming Constitution and the Wyoming Supreme Court rulings make it clear that the U.S. Constitution and federal law prevail over state laws and regulations. Where's the Casper Star going wrong here, John?
Well, it's pretty simple. The Supremacy Clause has to do with those enumerated authorities and powers that the federal government has. Everything that is not enumerated in the Constitution is relegated to the states and to the people, and the 10th Amendment confirms this. Now, I have struggled, and I assume anyone else would struggle, finding where in the United States Constitution the federal government has the responsibility in the individual's health and welfare.
Oh, I'm sure now, that's in the Good and Plenty Clause, John.
Right in the preamble. Promote the general welfare, right?
That has historically been left to the states. The first time that was broken from was when we created a Health and Human Services Department. And then that eventually led to Obamacare, one of the biggest unconstitutional moves we've seen in our lifetimes. But that doesn't mean that the states should not be pushing back. Our founding fathers fully intended for a power struggle to always be in place between the states and the federal government. And they felt that that power struggle would lead to the best balance. Now, in my lifetime, I've only seen that power struggle going one way, and that is a larger and larger and more powerful federal government. So maybe it's time that we started seeing the pendulum swing the other way.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's way past time. I mean, when you look at the text of the Constitution, I mean, the 10th Amendment, well, actually the 9th and the 10th Amendment are absolutely clear. You know, the federal government has those powers that are enumerated in those documents, and they don't, I mean, it says what it says, and it doesn't say what it doesn't say, to quote Justice Scalia. I just think that there's a lot of opposition to this because liberal outfits like the Red Star are in favor of a larger, more expansive government, and I couldn't agree with you more that we need to do whatever we can to push back against that and, you know, side on the on the right side of liberty and the Constitution.
I'm going to be very frank right now and just kind of take you through the way I see this particular situation. Number one, I do not believe that the federal executive branch is going to ever come out with rules that force the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to produce fines. I could be wrong about that, but right now I don't believe it's going to happen. The speech was given last month, the first half of last month, and we've yet to see rules. Actually, we've yet to see an order going to OSHA from the executive branch to promulgate rules. So that's the first premise that I operate under, is that we're not likely to see rules. And I've heard it on your podcast before. You've mentioned the fact that they're actually getting the effect they want, because HR departments across the nation are already enacting exactly what the administration was wanting.
Exactly.
Now, you know, I'm going to bring in another particular situation that's going on in our state, and that is what we're seeing in schools with masks and quarantines, and in particular, the Grace Smith situation. And you have to ask, well, how do the school districts manage to do this? Well, they manage to do it because our governor has maintained a state of emergency for over a year and a half. And, you know, corporations or businesses are open for business. We're all trying to hire people. People are walking about and doing their normal activities. And in most places, you don't have to wear a mask. We've gotten over the curve, if you will, that we were trying to flatten. And so what is this emergency? Well, if you dig deep enough, you'll find that it has to do with receiving the last little bits, and I don't mean little, of federal funding from the government, the federal government, in regards to this pandemic slash emergency. And so the governor is refusing to end this state of emergency so that he can receive as many federal funds as he can. And who's suffering for that? Our students are, for one. Our children are suffering for that. And when the governor himself didn't call a session, I would say that he was weighing the loss of federal funds over doing what the people want. I would say the same would be true of our leaders in the House and the Senate. So then it came to the body doing it, and I've been told that the governor is nauseous at the fact that we're calling ourselves into session. Well, what would cause that nausea other money than this sucking sound of money leaving the state? And you might argue, well, doesn't the state need that federal money? Well, if we do, it's because the federal government's policies, their attack on coal and oil and gas. But I would argue that it's those very dollars that have basically handcuffed us. We have people in the medical industry in this state that are scared to death that they're going to lose their jobs because they're unwilling to take an experimental drug and put it into their bodies. And the outfits that they work for receive a great deal of funding from Medicaid and Medicare. And those two funding mechanisms are eventually going to require that the practitioners are injected with this experimental drug. So why on earth would we want to take more of that money?
We wouldn't.
I had a question going back to OSHA, and you may or may not be aware of this. I was just made aware of it recently, and I don't know half of what I would like to know. But my understanding is that when OSHA was rolled out, states had an opportunity to either accept the federal model or to come up with one on their own level. And I don't know that I'm describing this accurately, but my understanding is that Wyoming has its own OSHA.
That is true. It's called Premacy, and we have that. We also have that in our minds, in the way we operate our minds, and the way we put the land back the way it was before. But the federal government is always overlooking that, and should our behaviors become, or our restrictions on businesses become less than theirs, they can step back in.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification on that.
Well, John, I really appreciate your time on a Sunday talking about politics, as we normally do. Is there anything else we haven't covered that you'd like to talk to us about?
We touched on the rules vote that's coming up to change it so that this special session can take place in 3 days and so that we can deal with one particular subject. I cannot stress how important this vote is. It requires a two-thirds or supermajority, and we don't have the votes to get that done yet. The expectation is that if we don't accomplish that vote, we will adjourn immediately. So all of the effort that we put in so far will be for naught, and we will not be able to protect anyone's job, let alone give them an opportunity to receive unemployment benefits if they do lose their job, should that vote not pass. So the effort that I see that is going to be the most effective at ensuring that we get a two-thirds or supermajority is for the people to become completely involved in this. And by that, I mean to become spectators of this actual event. If there was ever one day in people's lives in the state of Wyoming where they should take off work and come down to Cheyenne so that they can have an impact on what happens, it would be the 26th of October when that vote takes place. I believe that so much so that I have chartered a bus from the northeast corner of Wyoming to take a group of people down. I'm going to charge them about $10 to help cover the fuel, but I want them there on that day to fill both mezzanines and to be in front of the Capitol on the steps and to make their voices heard by being there so that legislators feel, palpably feel the desire of the people. That is a day when that is completely necessary. And if they can't make it down there to Cheyenne, I do hope that the YouTube channel, which will be streaming it live, will be completely overwhelmed.
You guys heard the man. Like, if you take off work on the 26th and get your tail to Cheyenne, you need to do that. Ken?
Catch the bus. It's cheaper.
And I have convinced people in each of the corners of the state to do a similar thing.
When they get off the bus, are they going to be chanting, "Let's go, Brandon"? Just wondering.
Well, I have to tell you, on my video giving that information out on Facebook, that's how I end it.
I actually saw that. So I had one other question for you, and this is not related to what we talked about. Forgive me, David, that the Ramble Room has a tendency to do this.
Weird.
But while I have an opportunity to talk to Representative Bear, I wanted to ask him about Article 1, Section 35 of the Wyoming Constitution. And this, in my mind, immediately goes back to SAPA laws. I bought, in good faith, parts to use on an AR-15 rifle, which now they're trying to turn around and outlaw. And both the U.S. and the state constitution have similar comments. This one says, again, Article 1, Section 35, Wyoming Constitution, "No ex post facto law, nor any law impairing the obligation of contracts, shall ever be made."
Yeah, it seems clear to me, Ken, and I would agree with you that they should not be able to make criminals out of perfectly law-abiding individuals simply by changing a law. And I would certainly be on your side on that and fight for that. I'm not sure of the legal loopholes that would be used to craft that. I think if we went back and looked at the National Firearms Act and how that managed to get through, that would be a good example of how they overcame that on a federal level, because, you know, it was perfectly legal to own a machine gun prior to the National Firearms Act,
and now
we cannot.
Yeah.
So how was it that they limited our Second Amendment right in that National Firearms Act? How did they get around people already owning those items? And did they grandfather them in? It doesn't sound like, you know, those people who are trying to outlaw your current weapons would grandfather those in. And that may be unconstitutional for them to do that.
Well, John, I'll give you the simple answer as to how they were able to do that. We let them.
Well, that's precisely right. You know, you'll hear the argument against the Second Amendment that was for muskets, and that was at that time. No, what that was to stop tyranny from your government. So whatever weapons your government might have, the people should also have. And in the days of muskets, that was an easy thing to do. But in the days of the M1 Abrams and the drones with missiles on them, it's much more difficult. But I would say, as long as a person is law-abiding and has the financial wherewithal to own those items, they full well should be able to constitutionally.
Or you have a group of people, like there were private colleges, universities, and schools that had military training programs, and they would own cannon and other similar heavy artillery. Many of those still exist. Anyway, that's a topic probably for another day.
Well, for me personally, you know, I own some NFA items, and so the federal government knows me and where I live, and I just assume I'm going to be one of the first targets, and I'll be taken out with a drone very quickly.
Well, we hope not, John. Well, once again, we appreciate your time, and you're welcome on Cowboy State Politics or the Ramble Room anytime you like.
Absolutely.
It's an absolute pleasure, and I appreciate all that you guys do.
Look forward to seeing you soon.
Have a good day, John.
Bye-bye.
As Representative Bear pointed out, this is a chance for our legislators to expand our liberty, to give us the ultimate choice to make our own healthcare decisions. But it also comes with some risks. Anytime those redcoats down in Cheyenne are in session, there's a chance that they're going to take away more of our liberty. So If it's at all possible for you to get off work on October 26th, that's a Tuesday, and go down to Cheyenne and show these people what we want and that we do mean business, it's important for you to do so. On Saturday's installment of Weekend Update, we'll play the interview with former Representative Scott Clem. We'll talk about all things Gillette, the library, and the Campbell County commissioners not accepting public comment during their regular meetings. It ought to be a really interesting discussion. I'll also get his take on the special session that's going to happen next week. And on next Wednesday's program, I have a very special exclusive interview with U.S. congressional candidate Harriet Hagerman. There's plenty of questions that Wyoming citizens have for her, and I'll try to get to the bottom of most of them. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is Cowboy State Politics.